This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you guys doing? And welcome back. It's been a long hiatus. We haven't seen each other for a long time. But now we're back, and we're back with a vengeance. Well, not that much of a vengeance. We're going to be talking about some cold, hard, well, call it truths. Yes, not any profound truths today. It's more logical truths, and we are going to be covering logic. And logic actually is not one thing, it's not a singular, especially when it's being studied here in the West. It's actually logics. It's plural, there's more than one of them, in the sense that you have propositional logic, you have predicate logic, and you have different kinds of logic. We are going to be covering propositional logic. Why? This is really, if you do a philosophy course in the United Kingdom, in an undergraduate level, you'll have to go through a module in propositional logic. Even if you do a computer engineering course, many of you may have done this, we'll have to go through some level of propositional logic. It's not that hard, actually. It's pretty easy, and in fact, surprisingly so. In propositional logic, there's about 7 or 8 important rules that you need to know. Yes, they can be subcompartmentalized into more than that. You know, so for example, we're going to be covering the syllogism. There's different kinds of syllogism. There's hypothetical syllogisms. There's this kind of syllogism. That. So we'll cover that. But really and truly, there's not much to it. So I'm going to go straight into it. In fact, before I do so, one thing I will say is that there's something called Arabic logic. I mean, it's called mantiq. Okay? And it's important because we're in Sapiens and we have, alhamdulillah, access to both the Islamic tradition and the Western tradition, that we try and include that in our sessions. Because logic is, obviously, as you guys know, was first kind of canonized or whatever, like into books and rules and all those kind of things by Aristotle and others before him, but mostly by Aristotle in the Hellenistic period. And then the Greek period had a lot of people writing and talking about it. And then again, when the translation movement happened in the Arab, or let's call it the Islamicate region, because actually included Persia and including all these other areas, there was lots of books and tracts, logic tracts, that actually the Islamic scholars and thinkers put in place. Ibn Sina, in fact, in the Najat, he has a whole section dedicated to logic. I think it's one of the best ones out there, but also Al-Ghazali, famously, he's written much about logic in our tradition. In fact, he said that if someone doesn't study logic, you can't trust him. You can't trust his mind. Because it's something, logic is meant to stop you from making errors and blunders. So if someone doesn't go through the basic rules of logic, you can't trust him. And he's written in Arabic many different books, like Mahak al-Nadhar, for example, is one book that he wrote. It's an introductory book on logic. Obviously, in his Mustasfa, he had like an epistemological beginning. But he's written things in logic. In the Ash'ari tradition, there's lots of things written in logic. And even in the Hanbalite tradition, there's some things. I mean, although it's more critical. Well, that criticality is actually very interesting, with most prominently Ibn Taymiyyah doing a response on logic, a Raddu al-Mantiqiyyin, a response to the logicians, or the Greek logicians, which has actually been translated by Wa'il Halaq, been translated into the English language. But we're not going to go into the history of it today. I was just giving you a bit of a flavor so you understand. The first thing we're going to be going through is propositional logic, and I'm going to be using the board, and it's going to be an interactive thing, and we're all going to be getting involved in some of the questions and some of the examples. The first thing I want to cover is the following. There is a difference between what is referred to as a valid argument and a sound argument. Now, these are very important key terms, especially in polemics and discussions. What is the difference between the two? Does anyone know? Yes.
A valid argument is an argument which is logically valid, but there is no truth in that argument.
Perfect. This is very good, right? So a valid argument is an argument which obeys the laws of logic. Yes? That's what a valid argument is. A sound argument, yes, it must obey the laws of logic, but all the premises must be true, and this is a key term. So what do we have with an argument? We have premises and a conclusion. Okay, so each premise must be true in order for the thing to be true. I'm not going to cover the syllogism now, but let's just, for the sake of argument, say the following thing. This is a very famous syllogism. Every man is mortal. Yes. Number two, Socrates is a man. So what would we say here for three? What would we say here? Therefore what?
The conclusion is Socrates is mortal.
Therefore Socrates is mortal. Okay. Now, do you think, is this valid? Is Tahmin, what do you think is that?
Yes.
It's valid. Is there any inconsistencies in the way this is being... There's no inconsistencies. Would you say it's true as well? Would you say it's sound?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so this is an example of an argument which is both valid and sound, which gives us the following principle, which is that every sound argument is valid, but not every valid argument is sound. So let me give you an example of an argument which is the opposite, in a sense. All right. An argument which, I'm not going to tell you what kind of argument, let's just say, all unicorns, for the sake of argument, all unicorns are white. Fairy is a unicorn. Fairy is a unicorn. Therefore, fairy is white. So, is there a problem with this argument, Matt?
It does seem like a valid argument, but you're implying that it's not a sound argument, but some logicians would argue that you can't make propositional statements about entities that don't exist.
Yeah, okay, fine. So you could say the soundness of the argument is disputable, yeah. You see. So this leads us to the following point, which is that I can't disprove the existence of unicorns here. I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, for me to say this is not sound, I would have to say unicorns don't exist. One person sees a unicorn and says, oh, there's fairy and, you know, can make something. But you can at least say the soundness of the argument is disputable. Do you see what I'm saying? So, but it's a valid argument, which is the main point. You can have a valid argument, and it's possible for it to be valid and unsound as well. Or it's possible, in most cases you'll find this where the argument is, for it to be valid and the soundness is disputed. And why do you think that is? This is a question for the group. Why do you think it is that the soundness of an argument will be disputed even though the validity of it is not? Yes?
People have different understandings of truth.
Okay, so it could be an epistemological thing, okay, different understandings of what truth is. But let's think more clearly about how do we derive our premises effectively? How do we derive them?
Empirical evidence.
Yes, exactly, right? Unless you're doing mathematics. Mm-hmm. I mean, effectively, mathematics is deduction. You could say mathematics is tautology. So if I say, for example, let me give you an example. You know what tautology is? Tautology is saying the same thing twice, effectively, yeah? That's a tautological statement. And in propositional logic, it's actually represented with this particular symbol, T. Okay, something true, tautology. So if you say the same thing twice, you're being tautological about it. All right. So if I say, for instance, 2 + 2 = 4. Now, this, if someone was looking and seeing some Christian missionaries, this is what they're doing at Sapiens. All right. This is the level that we're at here. You see, say, look, this is what they have to do. We're dealing with heavy stuff. 2 + 2 is one thing, right? This is one expression. Let's just say, let's for the sake of argument, call it a linguistic expression. Why not? This is a linguistic expression. Yes. And this means equivalent, right? And this is another kind of linguistic expression. In a sense, this is synonymous to this. You know, it's a synonym. You know what a synonym is, yeah? When you say the same word with different, same meaning with different words. That's what a synonym is. So 2 + 2 is equivalent to 4. So you're saying the same thing twice. So mathematics is a kind of tautology for the most part, but it can be a kind of deduction. Now, that's one field where you can deduce something without requiring extra mental empirical evidence. But for the most part, and of course, if you bring intuition into it, and that's more of an epistemological question, fitra and all that kind of stuff, you can make an argument. But for the most part, you'll find that most of these arguments that are being made, yes, actually are made. They are made with premises which are inductively found out. You find out this thing due to looking and observing the universe. Yes? Okay, so that is very important. The first thing we're going to go over is something called modus ponens. Okay? Now, this is the form of modus ponens. If P, then Q, P, therefore. Yeah, just pretend that says therefore. Q, okay? If P, it entails or implies. These are keywords. Entails, implies. Okay? P, therefore Q. Now, this is the valid point. It's valid. No doubt about it. This is consistent. If P, then Q. P, therefore Q. It's going in one direction. What does this start with? What's the operational word? If. So what is this called?
Conditional.
It's called a conditional. A conditional. Now, this is extremely important. We use it in language all the time. In Arabic, it's law. In sometimes. If in English. Yes? If P, then Q, P, therefore Q. So let me give you an example of it. And what we're going to do is we're going to spend 5 minutes. You're going to construct your own ones, yeah? I'm going to give you an example of a valid one. Hopefully it's sound as well. Let's see if it is sound. All right. So if you attend, Sapiens classes, you will be a force, let's just say a force, to be reckoned with. But I'm not going to write that all down. You'll be a force to be reckoned with. You attend Sapiens classes. Therefore, you are forced to be reckoned with. What would you say? That's a sound argument. I think that's both valid and sound.
Yes.
But having said that, you see how easy that is? It's really as simple as that. Now, you may argue, okay, well, how do we know what's valid or what's not valid or sound? We know how it is, because then we can start arguing, okay, this is a premise here. This is a premise. If someone has a problem with the premise, they say, I don't actually agree with the premise. Can you prove the premise? Can you justify the premise? This is where the fight is. This is where the argument will be. So I'll give you about 5 minutes, maybe 10, to just give three examples, write them down, and I'm going to ask the people, of just two or three of these examples from your own mind, using if P then Q, P therefore Q, and we will come back and respond or speak about it and discuss together. Okay, let's come back and... let's start with you, Mohd. I guess I heard you speaking in great depth about...
This is an example of that, right? More sponsor.
Yes, please.
If John is English, then he's European. John is English, then therefore he's European.
Easy, wasn't it, for you? It came off, so easy. You can see he's got a mathematical mind. Let's see who else has got a mathematical mind. Man, how about you? Have you got a mathematical mind?
If you go to the gym and train, you'll become stronger. You go to the gym and train, you become stronger.
Okay, it's good, it's right, but you've missed out a key word in the conclusion, which is what? They want to hear it.
Therefore.
Yeah. Make sure to use
therefore
it.
Therefore, you become stronger.
Yeah, these keywords are important. Just make sure. I mean, even in Arabic, idhan. That's usually what they put in the law and then idhan at the end. Idhan is therefore, Very important to put that there. Let's go through everyone. Mahdi, how about yourself?
If you pray, you succeed. You pray, therefore you succeed.
Excellent.
If I eat healthy foods, I will be healthy. I eat exclusively healthy foods, therefore I am healthy.
Excellent, brilliant. Try and use the same exact language. So don't put exclusively there. You okay. know, it's not wrong, but I'm just...
Yeah.
Yeah? Are you out of money? Tahmin, yeah?
If you eat chocolates, you will get bad teeth. So if you eat chocolate, you know, if I was to eat chocolates, therefore I'll have bad teeth.
So, okay, there's no problem, but there's... You eat chocolate, just
yeah. I eat chocolate, therefore I get
my
teeth. Yeah.
Okay.
If Ali revises, he will pass his masters. Ali revised, therefore he passed his masters.
Excellent.
If you are living, you age. If you are human, therefore you age.
Okay, that one's a mistake here. So okay. let's work on it together, right?
Okay.
You've added a new premise.
Okay.
Okay, so let's stick to the same premise. If you are, what was the first premise you said?
If you are living, you age.
If you are living, you age.
Yeah.
So what would be premise two if you want to have you age? You have to use the same language.
Yeah.
Let's think about it. So if you are human, you age. Okay, excellent.
So if you are, then you just say the same thing again, basically.
Okay, so you have to be what to age?
Living.
Did you say if you are living, you age?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you are living, you age. So premise two is you are.
Therefore.
No, premise two is you are.
You are living.
You are living.
Okay, therefore.
Therefore what?
Therefore you age.
Age, excellent. Okay. So just keep the same language.
Cool, understood.
Yeah, next one.
If you eat spinach, you're strong. You eat spinach, therefore you're strong.
Excellent, no problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just make sure that the English is correct. So if you eat spinach, you will be strong. Or like. Yep.
That's grammar.
Don't make it past, and you know what I mean. Yeah.
Okay. If I run, my heart rate increases. I ran, therefore my heart rate increased.
Okay, but you ran. It's fine. It's all well and good, but just keep the same tenses.
Mm-hmm.
I run.
I run.
Yeah, I run.
Therefore, my heart rate increased.
Yeah, yeah. Just for the sake of argument, you're right. I mean, I'm just being pedantic here, but that's how people are going to be pedantic. Okay, let's go for the second rule, and this one is. Getting a little bit more complicated, but if you guys can do this one, I'm sure you can do that one as well. Why not? I mean, see, look, already we're almost like, let's just say, 10% complete of the main rules that you need for maybe even more, maybe 15%. The next one is modus tollens. Modus tollens. Modus tollens. And it goes in the following way. We start again, if P. Yes. Then Q. Same way as the other one did, yeah? Now, look, this symbol here means not. It's a negatory symbol. Yeah, this is negation. Not Q. Therefore, not P. Okay. Before I give you examples, you try and extract this. I'll give you 2 minutes exactly, 60 seconds, and you create an example from it. You create an example. So let me just say it one more time. If P, then Q. Not Q, therefore not P. So with that, I'm making it a bit more difficult. Try and create an example with that.
Just a quick question on the first one.
Yes.
I think all our arguments were sound. If we said, for example, if you are a dog, you will become a cat. You are a dog, therefore you are a cat. That's
therefore you will become a cat.
Therefore you become a cat. That's modus ponens.
Ponens, yeah.
But it's not a sound.
It's valid but not sound, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
That's a good example of something which is valid but not sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this one's getting a little bit more difficult. And I don't want to confuse the issue too much here, but be careful with this one because there's a very famous logical fallacy called affirming the consequent. And we will cover that logical fallacy. It's called affirming the consequent. And if you don't know this well, you could easily fall into that logical fallacy of affirming the consequent. So if P, then Q, not Q, therefore, not P. And remember, this is the symbol for not. Negation. Okay. Oh, okay. Do you want a bit more time to create your example? A little bit more time, okay? I'll give you 10 more seconds.
I see.
Can we start with Maith? Because he's understood it fully.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Give an example. Yeah.
Example, yes.
If John is English, then John is European. John is not European. Excellent. Therefore, John is not English.
Excellent. Well, now, can you see how problematic this is, though? Like, in terms of soundness and... Let me give you an example. Let me give you an example of this, the problematic nature of it in terms of soundness, yeah? I mean, it's valid. These arguments are always valid, yeah? If I say, look, I'm going to use the same template. So to you, because you're quite good at this now. If Moaz, yes, if Moaz attends Sapien's classes, then he'll be a force to be reckoned with. Now watch what I'm going to do. He's not a force to be reckoned with, as it stands, which is not true, of course he is. But I'm just saying, he's not a force to be reckoned with. Therefore, he has not attended Sapien's classes. But you can really dispute this point. You could say, why is it the case that you have to attend these specific classes with this particular individual in order to be a force to be reckoned with? You can completely deny it. Say, look, I can go and study over here or over there and I can still be a force to be reckoned with. Do you know what I mean? So if let me make it more problematic. If Tahmin does not go to Oxford University, then he'll be uneducated. Tahmin is uneducated. Therefore, Tahmin has not gone to Oxford University. It's ridiculous, really, in terms of soundness. But it's all valid. Can you see? So, a lot of times you'll see the examples of this and you'll think, that's not true, is it? It's not true. A lot of these examples are false in terms of correspondence to reality and its truthfulness. But it's all consistent. And the only thing that needs to be in place for a valid argument to be valid is consistency. It has to obey the laws of logic. So now that I've done these examples for you, let me sit back down. And now it's your turn to bring forward the examples. It's a little bit more difficult now, as you can see. But this was, if you get this, then we're about 20% of the major rules, surprisingly, right? Go ahead.
So if arrows are made in Japan, then they are strong.
Yes.
They are not strong, so therefore they're not made in Japan.
Excellent. That is valid. But is that sound?
Could be.
I mean, think about it. I mean, can arrows be made strong from any other place but Japan? If I can take them to China and get some serious guy to carve them out and... I mean, it doesn't logically follow that it has to be there. Do you know what I mean?
Unless they have a really good sense of strong. Compared to everyone else.
Yeah, maybe. You can make these kind of arguments, but it's very difficult to justify that kind of premise, right? Mm. So you see the soundness, validity, tension. Tyler?
No, I got it wrong. I put, if peace requires the absence of hostilities are continuing, therefore there is no peace. So I just, I got the thing wrong.
Wait a minute.
He affirmed the concept.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yes. Okay.
This is the exact fallacy that you were talking about.
Yeah, that's affirming the concept. Well, you're pretty good at this. Have you done this before?
Yeah, I didn't want
to go to the logic. Oh, okay. So you've done it in logic as well. So that's, I mean, this was it's required. Like, if you ever do anything in philosophy, it's required. But trust me, guys, if you do this, if you get this right, you'll be able to spot certain contradictions and stuff like that, you know. That's why I haven't taught my wife this, because if she she finds out what's going on. Othman.
Yeah, if you study for the test, then you will pass your exam. You didn't pass your exam, therefore you didn't study for the test.
I like the way you said you didn't pass the exam. Because you used the same language, but you used it in negative form. You could have easily said, you failed the exam. You're right, this is correct, this is valid.
Yeah.
And you could argue it could be true as well to some extent. You can make an argument for that. Tahmin?
If you read books, you will be smart. You are not smart.
Yes.
Therefore, you haven't read any books.
Excellent. You see what you've done there, yeah? You're not smart. You'd think you'd go the other way around.
Yeah.
If you remember Allah, you'd be happy. Mm. You're not happy. Therefore, you do not remember Allah.
That's something we should have said to Jordan Peterson more clearly. That's what I mean. But it is what it is. Let's go with the next one.
Cool. So, if you are living, then you will age. If you are not aging, then you are not living.
So, say this again, and let's let everyone else get involved to try and get this done together. Let's go. Okay. Yeah.
So, if you are living, then you will age.
If you are living, then you will age.
Yeah, you will age.
You will age. Okay.
If you are not aging, then you are not living.
Okay, Maith, what's going on here? You know, what's happening?
Is it the second if?
Yes, he said it twice.
Yeah, apart from that, I think he did.
Okay, so let's remove. Let's remove the second if, because it's important not to have two ifs here.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Say it again.
So if you are living, then you'll age. You are not aging. Therefore, you are not living. I suppose.
That's good. Okay. Well done. Perfect. But what he said there was correct. Keep one if.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Understood. It is possible to have more than one if in the statement and stuff like that. You're getting it though, and everyone's getting it. We're grappling with the ideas. Let's go to the next one.
If you go to London, you went to England. Yeah. You have not gone to England. Therefore, you have not gone to London.
Excellent. And I think that's valid, and that is sound as well. I feel that's a good one, because you can't go to London unless, of course, you mean London and Canada. You know, but then that will be the fallacy of equivocation, which we can talk about. So it's more of an informal fallacy. Equivocation is, you know, when you mean something and you intend. For example, Sabor's famous example, I like his example. He says that someone's fainting on the floor and he's got a heart attack happening. Yeah, he goes, "Can I have a doctor here?" And our friend, he's a PhD holder. He stands up. He says, "I'm an academic. You know, I'm a doctor myself. Let me come and help." But he's a mathematician or something like that. You know, he's a philosopher, and he's trying to do the medical thing. It's not going to work, right? So the point is that when you use a word and then you intend something else, that's equivocation. So unless you equivocate and you say London in Canada or London in America, which I think there's London there as well, then yeah, that's a sound argument if you mean the London that we're talking about. Yeah. Yes.
If I don't eat, I'll be hungry. I am hungry, therefore I ate.
Go, Maath.
Yeah, from the concept.
Yeah, see, there we go.
Yeah, you're supposed to negate.
Yeah, so tell us what it was meant to be.
So what was the premise again, first premise?
If I don't eat, I will be hungry.
Yeah, so the second premise should be, I'm not hungry, therefore I did not eat. What was the first premise, sorry?
If I don't eat, I am hungry.
Yeah.
I am not hungry, therefore I ate.
Yeah, that would be the correct way.
Yeah, that's right. You said it right then.
Yeah, but the first time in the premise two, you said, I am hungry.
Yeah, yeah, no, he said right now. Saying, I'm not
hungry. But there's Asher here. He's negated in his first, premise, he negated it.
Yeah.
Said, if I don't eat, that's what the issue is. It's a logical operator, it's a negation.
Oh, okay,
and
it's
going against the issue.
So you got two knots.
Yeah.
Can I have another go?
Yeah, of course.
Right, if you train properly for the fight, you will win. You lost the fight, therefore you did not train properly.
Yeah, perfect. Don't say lost, say you did not win the fight.
Okay.
Just to be very pedantic about it. Mm-hmm. I think you guys all get it, right? Are you comfortable, right? Any questions? You just use the negation, but I think you understand, right? Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the next one, which is the syllogism. I think this is the next one, but let me double check. In the meantime, I want you to spend 5 more minutes speaking to the person next to you, 3 to 5 minutes, and produce a couple more, just so you can get the synapses moving on this one. 3 to 5 minutes on the same modus tollens, maybe one modus tollens, one modus ponens before we move on.
Okay.
And we won't put this on camera, it's just for our purposes, just so we can make sure it's all solid before we move on to the third one. Because you can see, we're going through like butter, like a knife through butter. So we're cutting through, you know, and this is very important and very good as well. Let's move on to the next one. We've had this discussion there. It's good to sometimes let it simmer into your mind, let it ferment, let it mature. Now we move on to the next one. Now, the syllogism, people think, we've just actually covered the syllogism in the beginning of this very session, but there is not one syllogism. This is a misconception. They think, okay, it is a logical syllogism, and they talk of a syllogism as if it is one thing. Actually, there are different forms of syllogisms. What we covered in the beginning was something called a quasi-syllogism, right? A quasi-syllogism is, let's say, the example of Socrates and Socrates as a man. Now, I'm going to go over some key terms here, because in proposition logic it's very important to know these key terms. So if I say, premise one, all men are mortal. Yeah, premise two, yeah? And this is called a major premise. In Arabic, it's called al-muqaddim al-kubra. Yes, and they did speak about it in the books of logic in the Arab world, right? Al-muqaddim al-kubra. So, all men are mortal. Premise one. Socrates is a man. So what do we have here? Just someone shout it out. Therefore?
Socrates is mortal.
Perfect, okay. Therefore, Socrates is mortal. All right. This is called al-muqaddima sughra, or the minor premise. Minor premise. Al-muqaddima al-sughra. All right, this is called a quantifier. Okay, this is called a quantifier. And in this case, where the word all is used, it's called a universal quantifier. Now, you could have different types of quantifiers. You could say some. It's a quantifier. It's not saying all. It's not a universal quantifier, for example. So, okay, all men are mortal. Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. A famous argument for God's existence. Who knows it? Using the quasi-syllogism as a format. What is this? The most, probably one of the most famous, actually, I would argue in the Western Academy, it is the most famous argument for God's existence in the last 20 years. Which is actually from Al-Ghazali. And that gives it away, really, doesn't it? And it is a quasi-syllogism.
Everything begins to exist as a cause.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
The universe began to exist. Yeah,
excellent. Okay, so let's put it all in. Everything, so this is almost a universal quantifier. Everything that begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist, therefore what?
The universe has a cause.
Yes, the universe has a cause. Well, the universe has, yeah. Universe has a cause. In Arabic, كُلُّ شَيْءٍ لَهُ بِدَيَةٍ لَهُ سَبَبٍ الْعَالَمُ لَهُ بِدَيَةٍ إِذَنْ الْعَالَمُ لَهُ سَبَبٍ. This is Al-Ghazali from his book, which is called, الْاِقْتِصَادِ فِي الْاَعْتِقَادِ. This is a quasi-syllogism. What can someone say about this quasi-syllogism? Say, okay, this no one can anyone deny that this is a valid argument? No. So the validity is not a... It's valid, 100%. No one says anything about the validity of this argument. What do people say about this argument? Why do people not accept? Why do some atheists like Quentin Smith and Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins, well, Richard Dawkins hasn't even engaged with it, but other people, why have they not accepted this argument?
They reject the premises.
Yes. So what premise in particular do people reject?
The second one.
The second one is the subject of the most fierce contention. Yes, this one here, the universe began to exist. And you can see this in the debate between William Lane Craig and Sean Carroll, which is the only debate people say that William Lane Craig lost. And he's got like a 7-1 record, let's say, if it's MMA terms, or 10-1 record. And this is his one, because he was trying to engage with Sean Carroll, who was a physicist, on physics, and you know, he had the edge there. But the idea that the universe began to exist, I mean, obviously, you could argue, as he did, redshift and the Big Bang, but you have to argue scientifically, inductively, empirically, which is why this second premise is susceptible to attack, is susceptible to scientific attack, as it has been, and has led William Lane Craig to produce a book called Time, Space and Eternity, which he's basically just debating all kinds of models, physics models, why his preferred ones are the correct ones, and so on. And dynamic time versus static time, theories of time. So he's had to engage with the second premise, but someone can attack the first premise. Everything that begins to exist has a cause. In as much the same way as someone can, an ultra-skeptic can say that every person is mortal, or every human is mortal, or whatever it may be. So how do you know that everything begins to exist? Because you saw it? Okay, well, you saw it, that's an inductive point. And if it's an inductive point, then it's susceptible to the problem of induction, and therefore it's not yaqini, it's not certain. But of course, they would say that about anything and everything that can be seen. Well, that has a sample group to it. So this is a quasi-syllogism. Without giving you any time, I'm going to pick you at random and see if you can create one with a universal quantifier just like this. How about you? Because I think we've all got secure knowledge on this one.
I'm thinking. If you watch the World Cup,
we're not starting with if here. I want to start with a major premise. I mean, you could have an if. We'll talk about how you can have an if, in fact. But I want you to start with a premise, with a statement, without an if.
Okay. All World Cup matches are football.
Yes.
Therefore...
No. Second premise. Choose an example of a World Cup match. Which one did you watch?
Argentina and France.
Is a World Cup match. Therefore, Argentina-France is?
A World Cup match.
Is football.
Yeah.
Because you said every World Cup match is football, right?
Okay.
Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah, so you see what was happening here. Okay, give me one.
Everyone who reads philosophy is confused. John reads philosophy, therefore John is confused.
Yeah, that is very valid, but is it sound? That's something which we beg to differ on, of course. Just a couple more. Yeah, Othman?
All dogs are mammals. Jeffrey is a dog. Jeffrey is a mammal.
That's right. Jeffrey.
Therefore, Jeffrey is a mammal.
I hope you mean that in a literal way, because otherwise you're insulting Jeffrey, the poor fellow. yes, so the quantifier can be, like when we say, a quantifier like everything, all... You can also have no. You can have a negatory one. Or as I said, you can have some as well. Now, there are different kinds of syllogism. One which is very interesting is something called the polysyllogism. Okay? Now, I'm not sure if you... Has anyone got a clue of what that is? What is a polysyllogism? Yeah.
Syllogism within a syllogism, or like two conclusions.
Oh, you're not only there. I mean, I don't think you're far away from the answer, from the sound answer. Okay. It's one with multiple premises. It's a syllogism with multiple premises. And here's where you can bring if, okay? If it can be very nicely said. So let's bring something, bring it back to life, to the philosophy of religion. There is dependent existence. Okay. If there is dependent existence, there is necessary existence. Therefore, there is necessary existence.
Can you use must be?
Yeah, you can. Why not? Can be. Why not? So, you can make this more. You can say, for example, there is... Let's make it even longer, yeah? Let's make it even longer. There is existence, yes? There is existence. Okay, this is undeniable actually, yes? If there is existence, it must be either dependent or independent. Going back to what we were talking about before. Or let's make this better actually, because it won't follow. Yeah. If there is existence, dependent things. From independent, from an independent thing. Yeah? So then you can say, therefore, dependent things come from an independent thing. So this is a polysyllogism. You're adding, look, this is two points of information you're adding there. Two points of information, and then you're coming to a conclusion. It's not necessarily a minor premise in a... Look, I'm bringing if here. This is if meant to be if. This is not necessarily a minor premise in a or a major premise and a minor premise, or quantify and I'm breaking it up. No. I am bringing an if, I'm bringing a conditional. And you can do this. You can play around with syllogisms. And there's different types of syllogisms. Like I said, the most famous one is the quasi one. This one's pretty good as well. This will be very handy. And the third one is a hypothetical syllogism. Okay, but before we get to the hypothetical syllogism, let's play around with some poly syllogisms. I'll give you 5 minutes. And then we'll go and we'll do the... I shouldn't put this here because it confuses everyone. It's not modus tollens. This is a syllogism. So let's play around with some poly syllogisms. And come back and present them. And then after that, yes, we can do the hypothetical syllogism. And we would have done about one third of logic, frankly, or propositional logic, or the major rules of propositional logic. Very surprising, isn't it? That you can cut through it like that. So 5 minutes, we'll be back. So hopefully you guys played around with that a little bit, just so you can understand different kinds of syllogism. Another important type, so we talked about, let's just ask actually, in fact, what are some of the types of syllogisms that we covered? What's the first
quasi.
One? Quasi. The quasi syllogism.
Polysyllogism.
There's another one called disjunctive syllogism. Okay. But before we get to that, I think that one's easier. So let's go through the hypothetical one. I need your attention for this one, right? So this one is the following structure. Okay. So if P, then Q. Okay. Starts just like modus ponens, right? If P, then Q. If Q, then R. So you thought that this letter would never come into it. Yeah, then we've got here, conclusion. What do you think the conclusion is? Therefore what?
P, then R. P, R.
Yeah. P, R, right? So you can say, that's correct, yeah. So if therefore P, R. So you're going from this, it's like, imagine this is a person, right? These are four people, person one, person two, person three, person four. And there's a ball, and one person is giving the ball to one other person, is giving the ball to another person. It's going in one direction. That's why it's easy with this one. He's passing the ball, playing football, you know. The defender is passing it to the midfielder. The midfielder is passing it to the striker. The striker is scoring the goal. That's what hypothetical syllogism is, right? So let me just give you an example of it so that you can create your own examples. After that. So the first one is, let's say, if it is Eid, we'll pray in the mosque. Now, imagine this, yes? You have what? If, which is what? A conditional. So we're starting with a conditional. If we pray at the mosque, pray at the mosque, we will pray 2 rakahs, because that is 2 units of prayers. Is what we pray in Eid prayer. Yes? Therefore. What's the therefore here now? Someone help me out.
If it is Eid, we will pray 2 rakahs.
Perfect. Yeah? Therefore, if it is Eid, we will pray 2 rak'ahs. Excellent.
I thought it was if we pray 2 rak'ahs, it is Eid.
No, because we said what was the form?
It's one way.
If P, then Q, right? And if Q, then what? R. So the conclusion is, if P, then?
R.
What is P here? Eid. Eid is the P. And what is the R? The 2 rak'ahs is the R. What is the Q?
In the mosque.
In the mosque is the Q. Yes, exactly. That's right. If you didn't have the mosque, I mean, consider the following. Can you pray? I mean, technically, yes. I mean, soundness, and you can pray in the park or whatever. But I'm saying in this syllogism, for purposes of validity, you need the mosque in order to pray the 2 rak'ahs, right? Once again, this is not a fatwa. I mean, you can't pray in the... Because someone's going to say, this guy doesn't even know the basics. You can pray, he'd pray in the park. This is what logic has done to them. You see these guys... you know, some madhali is going to come out and say, look, this logic has made them miss the fiqh, and please, you know, if P then Q, then Q then R, P therefore R, right? So should we play around with that for 5 minutes and create your own examples? We're nearly there, guys. This is like 50%, by the way. Can you imagine? This is called a hypothetical syllogism. Yeah, so now you know the quasi syllogism, you know the polysyllogism, and you know the hypothetical syllogism. Maybe I'll give you one more, which is the disjunctive syllogism. And there's a lot of that, you know, that can be said. It's very easy. That was the easiest one, I think. Yeah. Yes? Do you want to go through it now, in fact?
Yeah.
Okay, because it's so easy that I think it's worth... I'll use you as the example. Okay, now, the key word here is either. Because, you look, I want to just quickly give you a quick grammar lesson. In fact, we're doing that with Cambridge Arabic College in East London, which I'm sure you're all going to, you know, sign up to, because you need to get the Arabic on point. You guys have all a major discount because of who you are. And we've also got critical content online, which I'm sure you've all subscribed to. And if not, you should, because we teach the grammar, we teach the sarf, the morphology, all those kind of things. Very good. Anyway, the word here is either. Now, this is the word, it's a disjunctive phrase. This, look, before we get to this word of disjunction, there's two words. There's either a conjunction or a disjunction. A conjunction is like and. In Arabic as well. They call it harf atf. Yeah? Wow. Not wow, it's because you see me and all these kind of things. It's not. No, and. This is... him and him. You're putting two things together. So easy. Conjunctive. A disjunctive is or. This is the word. You say either this or that. And if you remember last week when we were having a discussion, we said there's something called a logical disjuncture, where you look at all of the possibilities eliminatively. And this is called an eliminative argument. Like the Quran says, Am khuliqu min ghayri shay'in. Am hum al-khaliqun. Am. Because am is a disjunctive phrase, just like aw. Sorry, yeah, aw. Am or aw in Arabic. Or and in English. Am. Is it this or is it that? It can either... What's the ayah? It's either we or you. Inna aw iyyakum la'ala hudan aw fi dalalin mubin. Is that right, yeah? I might have made that. It's either we. Look at this, the Quran is saying this. The Quran is saying, see, this is what Al-Ghazali wrote a book called Al-Qistas Al-Mustaqim. He tried to bring out all the arguments from the Quran that use a form of logic, yeah? Either we or you, and this is a very simple point, either we or you are, number one, either on the truth, on the guidance, or on deviants, clear-cut deviants. So we got two eithers. Me or you. Either me or you, we're on guidance or on clear deviance. It's a kind of disjunctive argument. Or it's at least a disjunctive phraseology here. أَمْ خُلِقُوا مِنْ غَيْرِ شَيْءٍ. Have they been created from nothing? أَمْ هُمُ الْخَالِقُونَ. Or were they themselves the creators of themselves? The Quran is telling you, look at all the possibilities. Effectively, the benefit of a disjunctive, this is very beneficial. They use it for crime investigation all the time. It's either here he was the murderer or this or that. Or it's either he came in and he did this. You look at all the possibilities. And connected to this is something called an abductive argument, which we talked about before. So you try and make an inference to the best explanation based on eliminative reasoning. Anyway, let's go to the form of this argument. So this is called a disjunctive syllogism. So I say, let me give you the example, right? Either Mu'adh is extremely intelligent, or is, let's say, extremely competent in logic, which has been proven today. Let's just not give any superlative. Let's just say competent, yes? Is competent in logic, yes? Or... what's this word? What kind of phrase is this? I don't know why I put so many underlines, but... what is the or? It's a disjunctive phrase. Yes. Or... he is an ignoramus. He is a fraud. He's a fraud! Let's do it like a meme style, alright? So what's the next... what do you think should we say? We negate this point. So he is not a fraud. Therefore, he's very competent in logic. If you didn't have the either there and the disjunctive, you could defend the consequence problem. But it's not so. So this... Yani, you don't fall into the logical fallacy of affirming the consequent. Very simple. Either he is competent or he is a fraud. He is not a fraud. Therefore, he is actually competent. I think that's sound and I think it's valid as well. So that is a logical disjunction. I've given you two, a hypothetical syllogism and a disjunctive syllogism. That way we have gone through today, I would say, the four most important ones. Well, let's say the most used ones, which are the quasi-syllogism, a poly-syllogism, a disjunctive syllogism, and the hypothetical syllogism. So I think if we were to cap it today with that, because this is a kind of thing where we can't go overboard, you will not retain any more information. We've done about 50% of what we need to do, which means we need to do one more. In our own time, what we're going to be doing, and at home I encourage you to do the same thing, is try and create some examples from your own using the form. And you can Google these things. I mean, it's online. And you can, on YouTube, there's lots of stuff. People from top universities, professors, teaching propositional logic. In the next session, we are going to finish propositional logic. And we're going to give you some key ideas from Arabic logic as well. Just for good measure. Because a lot of the stuff, like, for example, Al-Kulliyat Al-Khams, or the idea of the five universals. You will not find this in a book like this, the Logic Handbook, by Volker Halbach, which is what they recommended reading for example, philosophy students, undergraduate, before they do a logic course. They'll give you a book like this to read. You will not find that in the Western tradition. So we'll look at some of the ideas in the Arabic tradition, because some of them are actually quite useful. Very interesting, like da'arad. What is da'arad? The accident. They refer to it as an accident. What is this? What's the difference between johar and arad? What is this and that? And especially when you're reading Islamic books, this becomes extremely important on these topics. And with that, we conclude. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.